The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.
And greetings to the most educated, sophisticated audience in all of America. Welcome to the Bob Enyart Show. I am Greg Jackson, filling in for Bob here on KLTT AM 670. If you want to get to the website, you can go to kgov.com, kgov.com. Folks, on this show, you hear every day Bob Enyart and fill-in guests broadcasting truth, holding Christians accountable. And, you know, frankly, folks, we have been in a position in this country over the past 20 years where Christians in the public arena have never been as influential, where they could influence the political direction, the cultural direction of our country, arguably, as they have been over the past 20 years. And there is nobody, at least in my mind, that has been more emblematic of that than Judge Roy Moore, which I'm sure most of you who listen to this show know Judge Roy Moore's story. Of course, he was the judge who was a Supreme Court judge in Alabama, who was essentially taken off the bench because of a Ten Commandments monument in the courthouse in Alabama. And every time Christians that are in public office have the power to actually stand for God's truth, it seems that time and time again, we fail to walk by faith and we compromise our core values and beliefs at the altar of political pragmatism, and we end up blowing it. We end up not going to bat for people like heroes, in my opinion, and in many people's opinion, like Judge Roy Moore, who put God's natural law above man-made law and lost his job. Judge Moore, you with us?
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for coming on the show. Essentially, you did what a lot of people talk about doing, which is essentially walking by faith, putting God's word above man-made law. It has been a while since 2003. Walk listeners through. I mean, you went to West Point. You fought for your country in Vietnam. You came back, I think you were a circuit judge, correct me if I'm wrong.
I was, a lawyer first.
Yeah. A lawyer and a circuit judge.
A district attorney.
Came from, I wouldn't say poverty, but if you read your book, So Help Me God, The Ten Commandments, Judicial Tyranny, and the Battle for Religious Freedom, which I would recommend every listener listening to my voice to get a copy of, because it'll be one of the best books you've ever read, called So Help Me God by Judge Roy Moore. But you say in the book, Judge, that you came from very humble beginnings, you fought for your country, and then, of course, you enter the judiciary, and your last job was as a Supreme Court, Justice of the Supreme Court in Alabama. Here you are, you're walking the walk. This is right after 2000, right, where all these gains, and George Bush wins, and we have all of these enormous gains in the Congress, and we're going to change the society, and we're going to change the culture, and then you go, and you have the audacity, Judge Moore, to put up a Ten Commandments little monument, little stone monument in the courthouse there. And, of course, what happens from there, you were told to take it down by a federal judge. who, from what I've read, didn't even have jurisdiction to do that. What happened? Take us through it, 2003.
Well, thank you, Greg. To begin with, let me just say that I did come from what we call humble beginnings. I didn't come from a legal background, but I was trained in the law, trained to serve my country, and I had great respect for my country and the law. When I put up the Ten Commandments monument at the Supreme Court, that wasn't the beginning of the battle. The beginning of the battle began back in 1992 when I put up a small plaque of the Ten Commandments in my courtroom. And I must say that at that time it was a matter of faith in God and logic, that if the United States Congress could open with prayer and the United States Supreme Court could open with salutation to God, that certainly acknowledging God by God's law wouldn't be incorrect. But I knew there might be problems. As I began the battle in federal court and state court back in the early 1990s, I began to learn about our history. I began to learn about the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. And years later, when I put up a monument at the Supreme Court of Alabama as Chief Justice, which I was entitled to do, that was not only a matter of faith, it was a matter of law. For many of your people listening, I don't want them to think that I took an action just out of my own personal beliefs. This was not only out of my personal beliefs, but as a matter of law, the United States Constitution, our history, and our law or logic does not forbid the acknowledgement of God. To say that it does is absolute hypocrisy and foolishness. Our law actually mandates an acknowledgement of God. Because you see, the United States Declaration of Independence, what began as our organic law, in its first sentence says that we're entitled to exist by the laws of nature and of nature's God. Mm. That's not just a pretty phrase that Jefferson put in there. That was a reference to Blackstone's law, which says there were two, the laws of nature and the law of God, which are revealed divine law out of the Holy Scriptures. And then as I started learning in this federal district court case in the 90s about these things and trying to convince others, I saw politicians that would take advantage of the Christian perspective and say that they supported it. But when it came down to a federal court order that told me to do something that the law actually allowed me to do, and without which we would have no freedom of conscience if we didn't have the First Amendment, then I had to disobey, and actually the judge had no authority to give me such an order anyway. But even assuming that, I was not removed by that federal judge.
Explain to our audience why the judge, the federal judge, had no authority in telling you to take down that Ten Commandments monument.
Our Constitution of Alabama acknowledges God in its preamble. Every constitution of every state in some way acknowledges God, most of them in the preamble. The United States Constitution in the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, being the first part, talks about religion. The definition of religion given by Madison, who offered the amendment, given by Joseph Story, who wrote the commentaries on the Constitution, given by the United States Supreme Court in U.S. versus Reynolds in 1878, and included in the attachment to Everson versus Board of Education in February of 1947, defines religion as the duties which we owe to the Creator and the manner of discharging it. In other words, if you put that definition, which was very thorough throughout all of these things that I mentioned, came out of Virginia Articles of Rights, Section 16, I believe. But when you put that definition in the First Amendment, it's Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of the duties which we owe to the Creator and the manner of discharging it, nor prohibiting the free exercise of the duties which we owe to the Creator and the manner of discharging it. In other words, without acknowledgement of the Creator and duties we owe to Him, there would be no first part of the First Amendment. So this federal judge, when he said I had to take down a monument because it recognized a particular God, was completely out of line. He overturned not only the law of Alabama, but the First Amendment. And you know, the United States Supreme Court, in two cases, one in 1930 and one in 1946, I believe it was, in U.S. versus McIntosh and Girard versus the United States, recognize that our freedom of conscience comes from God. He overturned even that law. He said you could not recognize who God was. Now, for people that think it was about a monument, it was not. It was about whether or not I, as a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama, could recognize that a God existed in my official capacity. He said no. He said, while the Chief Justice, and I'm quoting from memory because I know exactly what he said, while the Chief Justice is free to keep whatever religious belief he chooses, the state may not acknowledge the sovereignty of the Judeo-Christian God and attribute to that God our religious freedom. Now, anybody listening to your radio station there would certainly recognize there's a hypocrisy that exists when the United States Supreme Court can open with God save the United States and this honorable court. That's their opening salutation. Mm. In fact, that opens every federal district court in this land. God save the United States and this honorable court. And yet they tell through the federal court that you can't acknowledge a sovereign God. There is a great hypocrisy going on when our law regarding the Pledge of Allegiance puts under God in the pledge, when the national anthem says things about God. Most people never hear I think it's the third stanza of the national anthem. And if they did, they would realize that the law not only says we can acknowledge God, but that our country is indebted to this God for our existence. If I can remember, oh, blessed be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may this heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just. And this be our motto, in God is our trust.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be singing that at the Super Bowl, probably.
No, they don't sing that verse. And the Star-Spangled Banner and triumph shall wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. You see, it was not just a matter of faith. It was a matter of law. And it was not about a monument. It was about whether or not a public official could sincerely, genuinely acknowledge that a sovereign God and higher law exist. And this battle has been going on for many, many, many years and is going on today as vigorously as it was going on in 2003. I stood up for the law, for our country, for the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Alabama, to which I was sworn.
And as you write in your book, if you look at the scriptures, Isaiah 48:1, you quote, like America today, you say, Judah was a nation that called upon God's name but refused to recognize his sovereignty or abide by his law.
Wow.
And you quote Isaiah 48:1, which says, by the name of the Lord, and made mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth nor in righteousness. And that's exactly, is it not, what happened in your case and is what's happening all around America.
I believe,
people playing lip service to God, right, but not wanting to acknowledge his supremacy, his sovereignty.
I think Isaiah 48:1 says, hear now this, O house of Jacob, which are called by the name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, which swear by the name of the Lord, and
yes,
make mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth nor in righteousness. And the reason I quote that, and I often do in various speeches, is because in the days of Judah, the same thing were going on. Same days of Isaiah, the same things were going on. They swore by the name of the Lord. Do we not swear by the name of the Lord? God save the United States, this honorable court, so help me God in our oaths. And make mention of the God of Israel. When we say in our national anthem, we talk about the God of Israel. We're talking about that God. And throughout our references to God, it's about the God of the Holy Scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
Are we not doing the same thing, but not in truth nor in righteousness? In other words, they make a hypocrisy.
Greg Jackson filling in for Bob Enyart. We have Judge Roy Moore on with us. His book, So Help Me God, is a fantastic read. Highly recommend picking up a copy of that book. Now, Judge Moore, after all of this happened, you make the point that this was a matter of God, of faith in God and logic, and really a matter of law. You were just fulfilling the law, acknowledging God. How does it happen that a federal judge is able to order you to take that monument down in violation of God's natural law, which is really the undergirding of our supreme law, the Constitution? How does that happen that a quote-unquote Christian conservative attorney general by the name of William Pryor, who, by the way, was nominated and put on the federal bench by George W. Bush, how does it happen that he, as attorney general, would go along and instead of defending you, and you talk about this in your book, why doesn't somebody like him who claims to believe in the same things that you do, the sovereignty of God's natural law as being transcendent and above man-made law, how does an attorney general with those type of credentials end up turning against you? And similarly, when you look at Christian leaders such as Richard Land, Jay Sekulow, even Pat Robertson, I have an email that is going to be in an upcoming book that I'm writing from the president, former president of Concerned Women of America, who's a friend of mine, Sandy Rios, who said, and I quote, she said, "You may remember he had been elected Chief Justice talking about you by something like 84% of the Alabama vote. The night before a pastor's prayer breakfast in support of Justice Moore, Jay Sekulow and Richard Land made phone calls to pastors scheduled to attend and persuaded them to withdraw their support for him. The next morning, only a handful came," and I'm sure you remember that.
Yep.
"They trusted Jay, and they trusted Dr. Land, as did other voters in Alabama, and confusion and doubt set in." So the question is, how do you explain people who say they believe in the same things that you believe in, Judge Moore, the supremacy of God's natural law, taking a stand as you did, and then seeing them essentially stab you, knife you in the back? What's your rationale? How do you see something like that happening?
Well, I didn't believe it would happen, but I was naive. And to answer your question, I'm going to refer to Romans, the first chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It says,
verse 28.
Before that, okay. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. And then verse 28 says, "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient." That answers your question from a biblical standpoint. Why did they do it? Because they don't put the sovereignty of God above the sovereignty of man. They put the sovereignty of man above the sovereignty of God. And these religious leaders and people like Bill Pryor, who once defended the Ten Commandments in court when he was an attorney general, but wanted an appointment to the 11th Circuit by the Bush White House, chose to prosecute rather than defend. They had no authority to remove me. As a matter of fact, every lawyer listening to this radio station will recognize that when you violate a court order, who is it that punishes you? It's the court that gives the order.
That's right.
In a contempt hearing. A contempt hearing was set before the federal district judge, Myron Thompson. It was canceled. And of course, I didn't object to a contempt hearing being canceled. But then it was transferred to an ethical tribunal, which said that because I violated an order, it didn't matter whether it was lawful or it was unlawful. I was to be removed. So we've gotten to the point where we recognize unlawful orders over your duty to the Constitution. That is exactly the opposite of what Lieutenant Calley in the Vietnam War, which I was involved in the Vietnam War, and I remember the story of Lieutenant William Calley, who massacred a great deal of people at My Lai.
Yeah, you talk about this in your book.
And he was prosecuted, and the court-martial said, it doesn't matter that you say your commander authorized you. We don't believe he did, but even if he did, you were not authorized under the Constitution. That's a higher law. Well, there is a higher law than federal court order. It's the United States Constitution. And quite consistent with what you're saying, Greg, there's even a higher law than that, and that's God's law. It just happens that the United States Constitution was written in conformity with God's law. There was no dissonance to it. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution recognizes that God is the Creator God. It says the duties which we owe to the Creator and the manner of discharging it. That was completely outside of the federal government. Every liberal listening to your station should thank God that they can believe what they want to believe.
I think we got a few here.
Because that's freedom of conscience. And the United States Supreme Court in 1931 in U.S. v. McIntosh recognized that that freedom of conscience comes from the will of God. Justice Sutherland in that case, writing the majority opinion, said, "We are a Christian people, according to one another, the equal right of religious freedom, and acknowledging with reverence the duty of obedience to the will of God." Chief Justice Charles Evan Hughes, who wrote the dissenting opinion, also recognized that that freedom comes from the will of God. He just disagreed that in the case whether a Canadian pastor had to take an oath not to fight in a foreign war to be admitted to citizenship. But basically, what that federal judge did, he didn't remove me from office. They canceled the federal court, so I had no appeal to the United States Supreme Court on the lawfulness or unlawfulness of the order that he gave. I submit to you his order was completely unlawful, and it disagreed with the United States Supreme Court. But you see, the United States Supreme Court has a problem. They cannot explain how they can open their sessions with a prayer.
That's right.
And yet forbid school children from opening with prayer.
Hey, we only have a couple of minutes left, and we're going to have you back on the show tomorrow. So listeners, definitely tune in to part two of this. But should Bush at the time have done something? Was he constitutionally obligated to do something? And what about Bill Pryor, the Attorney General? Should he not have been removed from office?
You're asking another question. I agree that George Bush should have done something.
He obligated to do something?
I think he is, yes, to uphold the Constitution of the United States. And the First Amendment doesn't forbid the acknowledgement of God. But you see, you're missing one critical point here. He was advised by Karl Rove.
That's right.
And Karl Rove, out of the Bush White House, mandated the movement of this monument.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a Democratic governor in Alabama. It was a Republican. It wasn't a Democratic attorney general. It was a Republican. And it came out of a Republican administration in the White House. So even though I was a Republican when I ran as Chief Justice and still am, it wasn't the Democrats that removed me. It was out of a Republican administration. I'm so disappointed in the Republicans. I'm more disappointed in Republicans than I am Democrats. I mean, Democrats expect it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, but these Republicans, they play a political game. It's like a game. Get elected, fool Christians.
Yeah.
Get up there and then play the game so we can keep the power.
Judge, were there any leading conservative legal organizations that came to your rescue? The ACLJ, for example, Jay Sekulow talks about protecting and defending a religious liberty, which seems to me like your case was all about that. Liberty Council, which is Matt Staver's organization, Pacific Legal, ADF, Any of those organizations come to your rescue?
The only organization that came was Dr. James Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Core Ridge.
D. James Kennedy.
And, of course, he's deceased now, but he was a very, very valiant. So, and also Dr. James Dobson came to Montgomery and spoke on my behalf. So I admire those two men very, very much. Because they understood.
And Alan Keyes, I believe.
Alan Keyes came. Yes, Alan Keyes was very vocal and very, you know, he's a great speaker. He understood it so well.
Yeah, he's a pretty articulate guy. Now, we might have to pick this the rest of your answer up tomorrow as a little teaser to our audience. But, Judge, why do you think that these leading organizations, they make tens of millions of dollars promoting supposedly Christian conservative values and people like yourself that are willing to walk the walk in defending them. What do you think it was about your case that would have inhibited them from defending you?
Well, because they wanted to win in court. And they want to win the way the court says win, which is to basically deny there's a sovereign God, but they'll let you do it if you do it a certain way. And I can talk about that tomorrow when you come back.
So essentially, you're saying that pragmatically speaking, these organizations were more pragmatically minded than biblically minded. Well, that's an interesting thing that we're going to have to pick up tomorrow. And, Judge, I want to also talk with you a little bit more, at least on the theoretical level, about the role of the judiciary. You talk about this illegal order, and I think Americans have been so lied to for so many generations. I think ultimately it's biblical ignorance that has led to constitutional ignorance in our Constitution. I think you'd agree with that. There's a spiritual, undergirding to all this. But what I really want to talk about tomorrow is, you know, we hear that courts can overturn constitutional amendments and that the Supreme Court has the final say, that the ultimate arbiter of what the law is and isn't. And I want to find out from you if this actually coincides to our Constitution and the original intent of the Founding Fathers, because there's a lot of court cases, and I see really a lot of these conservative Christian organizations as scoring goals for the other team.
Exactly.
They're the ones that are acknowledging a imaginary constitutional right that just does not exist, which is that courts can make law and overturn laws and are the ultimate arbiters of what is and isn't the law. So we'll pick that up tomorrow. I want to tell everybody that they can go to KGOV, go to the archive section. If you want to share this program with somebody else, you can also make a donation here at KGOV. We need your support to keep Bob Enyart live on the air, disseminating daily the truth, as I'm sure we all appreciate.
You're invited to tune in to Bob Enyart Live right here on KLTT.
Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church, hosts a conservative talk radio news show.
It's fun. Hear the O'Reilly O'Reilly segments. Explore the real difference between right
and left wingers.
And learn why liberals call for peace
while conservatives fight for freedom.
So stay tuned to AM 670 KLTT right here on your dial.
And listen to Bob Enyart Live.
One of my lifelong heroes, a 20-year congressman, worked with Ronald Reagan to fight abortion at a federal level. This is Congressman Bob Dornan. Bob, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Reverend Bob Enyart, for the rest of my life, I'm indebted to you. I got your documentary. Focus on the strategy that you gave me, seven simple words that I will never look at another piece of pro-life legislation without saying those words.
But what are those seven words?
Seven words, and then you can kill the baby.
It's a bad law if it says, and then you could kill the baby.
And then you can kill the baby. If you do this, that real notification, your documentary, everybody in America who wants to be part of a good fight, they must get that documentary on the strategy.
Thank you, Bob Dornan. That was Bob Dornan, U.S. Congressman, fought for life for many years. We appreciate him and are thrilled with his endorsement for our video, Focus on the Strategy.